This is the PoetryFoundation.org podcast for the week of February 12th, 2007. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, more love poems for your sweetie. Last week on the podcast, we heard from poet Angie Malenko about love poems she had chosen to feature on PoetryFoundation.org. It's one of several curated lists of love poems you'll find on the site in anticipation of Valentine's Day. This week, it's Joel Brower's turn. Joel Brower is the author of two books of poems, Exactly What Happened, out from Purdue University Press, and Centuries, published by Four Way Books. He is a frequent contributor to Poetry Magazine, and in fact, he has a poem in this month's February issue. He joins me from a studio at WUAL at the University of Alabama, where he teaches. Hey, Joel.
Hey.
So in your romantic history, have you ever sent anybody a love poem?
Oh, boy. I'm sure I have. It sort of makes me cringe to remember some of them, but yes, I believe I have done that.
Did they work?
Sometimes yes, and sometimes no.
So you've chosen, I think, seven poems that you've recommended, seven love poems. And one of the things that surprised me of all the poems that are recommended by all the poets for this month's special on love poems, nobody has recommended a poem by Rilke, the great German poet. You would think that he would be a shoo-in.
Well, I think it was Berryman who said Rilke was an asshole. I mean, he's not really much of a... He's definitely a romantic poet, but I think he loved himself more than anybody else.
Yeah, but he is kind of the uber-romantic poet. I've used him.
And did it work for you?
Kind of, yeah.
I did
all right with it. But I was very surprised to find something by Tony Hoagland among your selections. It's called Wind Chime. It comes from a book of his that I've actually read. Yeah, this poem went right by me. I didn't realize what a tender and romantic poem it actually is. Why did you choose this one?
This poem, I think, is a wonderful example of a contemporary poem that takes the problem of how to write a sincere, heartfelt love poem in an age of cynicism and sarcasm.
He can be incredibly sardonic in his poetry, and also very aware of contemporary failings. I don't know how else to put it, about the tawdriness of our own culture, and he pulls that into the poem, and he does something at the end that's really unique. Could you read that for us?
Sure. Wind chime. She goes out to hang the wind chime in her nightie and her work boots. It's 6:30 in the morning, and she's standing on the plastic ice chest, tiptoe, to reach the crossbeam of the porch. Wind chime in her left hand, hammer in her right, the nail gripped tight between her teeth. But nothing happens next, because she's trying to figure out how to switch number one with number three. She must have been standing in the kitchen, coffee in her hand, asleep, when she heard it, the wind blowing through the sound the wind chime wasn't making, because it wasn't there. No one, including me, especially anymore, believes till death do us part, but I can see what I would miss in leaving, the way her ankles go into the work boots as she stands upon the ice chest, the problem scrunched into her forehead, the little kissable mouth with the nail in it.
So it's basically a poem about a woman hanging up a wind chime, and the poet and the speaker in the poem observing her. And that the one line that makes this poem so contemporary is when he says, "No one, including me, especially anymore, believes till death do us part." It works there, because then you have the real romantic image that comes after that, right?
Yeah, it's a great rhetorical move on his part. He establishes his credentials as a contemporary 21st century cynic. So yeah. I think we're once he's done that, then we're much more willing to follow him down the road that he takes us.
And the poem ends with one of the most memorable images of a romantic poem I've ever read: the problem scrunched into her forehead, the little kissable mouth with a nail in it.
Yes, definitely. I mean, if the poem ended with the second to last line, the little kissable mouth, we would think it was excessively romantic. But by tempering it with that nail, he adds a certain hardness to it that I think seems more credible.
Mm-hmm. You also include a poem by Jean Valentine called The River at Wolf. Can you tell us a little bit about Jean Valentine and her poem?
Sure. She's a poet that I have long admired, and she's a very terse poet. Her poems are often very small and almost prayer-like in their sort of meditative quality. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they can really pack a wallop emotionally, as I think this one does.
Mm-hmm. And what's the poem about?
Well, I think it's...
it's a little elusive. That's why
it's a little elusive. I think that it's about two lovers, and I think it's about a time that two lovers went through when they were distant from each other, either literally or figuratively, and then are now coming back together.
Mm-hmm. Can you read it?
Sure. The River at Wolf. Coming east, we left the animals. Pelican, beaver, osprey, muskrat, and snake, their hair and skin and feathers, their eyes in the dark, red and green, your finger drawing my mouth. Blessed are they who remember that what they now have they once longed for. A day, a year ago, last summer, God filled me with himself, like gold, inside, deeper inside than marrow. This close to God, this close to you, walking into the river at Wolf with the animals, the snake's green skin lit from inside, our second life.
Yeah, it's a mysterious poem. It's not the narrative is not totally clear. I think you're right. It's something having to do with a couple coming back together. How do you make out that one part where she says, the speaker says, a day, a year ago last summer, God filled me with himself like gold inside? That, to me, that sounds very sexual.
That's right. And then this close to God, this close to you, that there's a sort of analogy being drawn here between a spiritual ecstasy and a sexual ecstasy.
Another surprising choice you made is actually not even a poem, I think. It's a note from Gertrude Stein to her lover, Alice B. Toklas. Am I right about that?
That's right.
Where did you find this poem?
This poem comes from a book called Baby Precious Always Shines, which is a collection of love poems that Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas wrote to each other. The pattern of their lives was quite fixed. Stein would stay up very late writing, and Toklas would go to sleep. And Stein would leave these notes on her desk or on the table for Toklas to find when she woke up in the morning. So these notes were the last things that Stein would write at night before getting into bed with her lover.
Go ahead and read that if you would. I don't know anybody that could pull this reading off except for maybe Gertrude Stein herself. So, but give it a shot if you would.
Oh, I'm happy to try.
Okay.
The house was just twinkling in the moonlight, and inside it twinkling with delight is my baby bright. Twinkling with delight in the house, twinkling with the moonlight. Bless my baby. Bless my baby bright, bless my baby twinkling with delight, in the house twinkling in the moonlight. Her hubby dear loves to cheer when he thinks, and he always thinks when he knows, and he always knows that his blessed baby wifey is all here, and he is all hers, and sticks to her like burrs, blessed baby.
Why do you suppose she's using he, her hubby dear, instead of she?
Well, they self-identified. Stein was always in these notes, hubby.
Uh-huh.
And Toklas was always wifey. They enjoyed playing that game of, oh, we're just another bourgeois husband and wife.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's a wonderful reflection of life as art and art as life, because in the notes, too, and in much of her writing, Stein plays with these sorts of patterns and finding pleasure in using sing-songy, nursery rhymey sort of language with all of these, you know, baby, 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 you know, all these conventions,
mm-hmm.
but then also messing with those conventions.
Mm-hmm.
And she does that in the writing, just as they did it in their lives.
Okay, Joel Brower, thanks very much.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
You can read all the love poems Joel Brower selected on our website, poetryfoundation.org. You can also read one of Joel Brower's own poems in the February issue of Poetry Magazine. His latest book is called Centuries, which was published in 2003 by Four Way Books. You can read a handful of his more recent poems on our website, where you'll also find poetry news, features, and more than 50 previous podcasts of this program, where our motto is...
You should never explain a poem, but it always helps nevertheless.
Let us know what you think of this program. Our email address is podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For the PoetryFoundation.org podcast, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.